Hello, everyone. Happy Sunday. And Cheryl, I really enjoyed that last little that prayer. It was so nice. I really enjoyed it. Thank you. So as I said, happy Sunday, everyone. And I am here to share from the Seven Steps to Awakening. I am going to begin at 488, because last week I ended at 487. So I'm going to give you all that are in the room, I'm going to give you a link directly to 488. For those of you who are not in the room, if you want to join us in the journal, you'll find 488 by going here. Go to RDA7, that is the digit 7, it is not spelled out. RDA 7 Steps Journal.wordpress.com. And when you get there, you can either look on the menu bar above or look on the right hand menu and find Step 2. Then underneath Step 2, find the numbering sequence that will allow you to find your way to number 488. And while everybody is finding their way there, Cheryl, I sent you an itinerary a few moments ago for you to look at. For those of you who don't know, I'm going to Santa Barbara, California, May 10 through May 12. There's an event there that's being hosted by Cheryl and Teddy Poppy, and it's called An Intimate Gathering with Regina Dawn Akers. It's going to be at this lovely place, the Santa Barbara Mission. Larry Sire will also be there, along with Cheryl Valentine and Teddy Poppy. And Cheryl, what I just sent you was the itinerary, a possible itinerary for my flights. It was the best price option, but what I'm not certain about is if it has me leaving the Santa Barbara Mission too early on Sunday or not. So that's what you want to look at, see if you think that's good or if you want me to go back and find something a little later. Cheryl says the website is anintimategatheringwith.org. Anintimategatheringwith and then .org. So that's where you can go to register. Also, you can find that event as well as other events if you go to reginadonakers.com/events. ReginaDonAkers.com/events. But yeah, the Santa Barbara event, it's going to be a lovely location, and it's going to be a really wonderful event, I feel, because Cheryl has agreed with me. We've both felt the same thing, to be completely spontaneous. So it'll be a completely spontaneous event. It's not going to be me sitting there talking for 3 days. I don't do that anymore. I'm sure there will be some teaching, there will be some contemplation time, there will be some group discussion time, there may be some just taking breaks and taking walks. I really don't know. I can't promise you. And I'm very, very happy about that. I'm very, very happy. It's going to be a true retreat, guided by spirit, and hopefully I'll see some of y'all there. I see Barbara says she's coming, and I'll see you there. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. All right. So as I mentioned, I'm going to begin with number 488 tonight. What I would like to do first, of course, is just take a few moments of silence. So please join me. Amen. Okay, so someone says, what is this journal? I see the web page, but it doesn't explain what it is. If you click on About, there's an About option up on the menu that talks a little bit about what it is. In relation to the course, you want to relate it to A Course in Miracles. All right. I can do that for you. In 2004 and 2005, so from April of 2004 to June of 2005, I did the Course in Miracles workbook. I also, in that same time frame, read the text and the manual for teachers twice. I really did the course workbook very effectively. By that I mean that, you know, if the course was asking you to remember something every half an hour, I did a pretty good job of doing that every half an hour. I really had a very effective experience with the course workbook. I began having visions. I began hearing an inner teacher. I began receiving messages from the Holy Spirit. It was an incredible year with the workbook. What I have found, however, maybe because it was such an effective experience, I can't do the workbook again. It'd be like going through, like, you know, you went through first grade and then trying to go through first grade again. It's just not the same. Last November, by last November, I actually mean November of 2011, I received guidance to start this book called The Seven Steps to Awakening, reading the quotes in it and contemplating it and writing this journal. And I, you know, I did that. I followed that guidance. But what I find for me is that it's very similar to my experience of doing the course workbook, in that it's taking me to the next level. It's taking me to levels of seeing, levels of knowing, levels of experiencing that I had not yet come to. So for me, you know, the relationship to the course is that it's as powerful as the course workbook. After the course workbook has already fulfilled its function. At least that's my experience. Cheryl Valentine was just in the room. I think she has had a similar experience. So that's the relationship to the course. The truth is the truth. It doesn't matter whether it's the course pointing to it, whether it's the masters in the Seven Steps to Awakening pointing to it, or someone else. It's all the same. So that's the other relationship to the course, and that there's only one truth with many pointers, and Seven Steps to Awakening is another pointer. But I find it to be effective, like the course workbook was effective when I went through it. All right, so hopefully that answers your question, Free Art 2012. All right, so why don't we begin? What I'm going to do is I'm going to read the quote from Seven Steps to Awakening. This quote is actually quoting the Supreme Yoga, also known as Yoga Vasistha, which many, many people from India would know Yoga Vasistha. And yes, the journal Free Art is what I wrote after contemplating the quote in Seven Steps. That's what I wrote. So here's the quote, number 488, that I contemplated. Then we'll go to the journal and we'll look what I wrote after the contemplation. You're welcome, Free Art. So 488 says, "That which is firmly believed to exist is experienced by that person physically, for the body is only mind." Again, "That which is firmly believed to exist is experienced by that person physically, for the body is only mind." In the mind. And you can see how this is the same as the course. You know, the course says that the body does not at any time exist at all. So this is, of course, the exact same teaching. If you go to 488 in my journal, we will look at what I wrote after contemplation of this. "The body itself is not real, being equal to the illusion of the world. Illusion within illusion, it experiences illusion." And before I go any further by reading from my journal, let me just give you a symbol that would help to clarify this first thing that I wrote. If we imagine literally a cartoon world, and then in that cartoon world there is a cartoon character, the cartoon character is going to experience the cartoon world as real. Because both are cartoon, right? Sameness. So this is really saying the same thing. The body is not real, just as the world is not real. However, if there's belief in the body or belief in the world, you know, they will seem to validate each other as real. It's like having a cartoon character in a cartoon world. So the body, you know, when the body, if I stick my finger in this cup of water and I feel the cold in the cup of water and I feel the ice, the body is verifying that the cold water and the ice are here. And the cold water and the ice kind of verify that the body is here, you know, through their interaction. Both, I'm sorry, I'm licking the water off my finger now. Both seem to be true. But just because the body experiences the world, that does not mean that the world or the body are true. That's like a cartoon character experiencing a cartoon world, right? So again, starting at the top, the body itself is not real, being equal to the illusion of the world. Illusion within illusion, it experiences illusion. The primal thought, illusion itself, extended as mere illusion. Both body and world are within it. Now, we started looking at the primal thought last Sunday when I was sharing from the Seven Steps Journal, but for anybody who knows A Course in Miracles or anybody who knows NTI, the Holy Spirit's interpretation of the New Testament, the primal thought is not a new idea. The primal thought, it may be worded different, but A Course in Miracles calls it the tiny mat idea. NTI teaches it in NTI Romans 2, where it calls it a curiosity. The primal thought is the first thought, that was an unreal thought. NTI calls it the question, what would it be like if everything were different than it is? A Course in Miracles does not specify what the tiny mat idea was. It just says it was a tiny mat idea. Sometimes you hear people say it was the idea, what would it be like if I was separate? But whatever that first idea was, which I'm sure can't even really quite be put into words, any words that we use to try and understand that first idea are just symbols, helpful symbols. But whatever that first idea was, that's the primal thought. And the idea itself was an illusion. And the reason we know the idea itself was an illusion is because truth or reality is changeless. And this idea was an apparent change. So it's an illusion. It would be, again, very much, you know, if we put it in human terms, it'd be very much like if I was sitting here, you know, Regina Dawn Akers in Pueblo, Colorado, and I had a thought, what if I were the Queen of England? And I began to imagine what it would be like to be the Queen of England. That very first thought is an illusion. I can go off into that fantasy. I can get very involved in that fantasy, but I'm not the Queen of England. So that very first thought and everything that followed that very first thought is an illusion. Well, that's the same thing with the primal thought or the tiny mat idea. That very first thought and everything that came from that very first thought are illusion. So the primal thought, illusion itself, extended as mere illusion. Both body and world are within it. They're within that first illusory idea. The primal thought is the birth of mind. Everything created by primal thought is mind's house of fantasy. Belief in the primal thought, then, is the origin of belief in illusion. And again, if you know A Course in Miracles or if you know NTI, this is not new to you. So why don't we scroll down and click on number 489. You'll find it underneath the comment and reply area. I'm also posting a link in the room. And I will read number 489 first from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. Just as some people remember their dreams, some people also remember their past existences. Now that's kind of interesting. It does appear that there are people who have remembrances from a past life. You know, we talk about reincarnation from a past life. And in fact, it's even possible that I've had a remembrance. I have a memory of what appears to be a memory. It appears to be a memory, except it's not from this lifetime. I have a memory of being a young black girl, maybe 11 or 12 years old in my memory. I get the feeling it actually wasn't during the time that the African Americans were slaves in the United States, but like shortly after. And I still lived in a slave cabin with my grandmother and my uncle. And I remember, I remember the cabin didn't even have windows. There was no windows at all. So it was a log cabin with no windows. And my grandmother, although I loved her very much, was very mean. Of course, she, you know, had been a slave. So, the meanness could have come about because of how she was treated. But she was very mean. And in this particular memory, she had a skillet. And she was beating my uncle, and him out of respect, he was not fighting back, and so he was becoming bloodied by the skillet, and I just wanted to get away. And so I managed to slip by them and run outside, and when I ran outside, I could see the pasture and the sunlight and all of that, and then I was just standing there by this wooden fence, kind of made almost by sticks almost. And that's the end of the memory. So, those of us who know the idea of reincarnation, we might say, well, that is a memory from a past life because it seems to be a memory, but it certainly has nothing to do with Regina Dawn Acres' lifetime, right? So I have this strange, bizarre memory. Well, what's interesting about 489, Yoga Vasistha's quote says, just as some people remember their dreams, some people also remember their past existences. He likens that to remembering a dream. We make a mistake sometimes to think if there are people who can remember a prior lifetime, that means that prior lifetimes are real or true. And in fact, we might even get into an argument with someone who doesn't believe in reincarnation. Say, I'm certain reincarnation is true because I remember I was a young black girl, But that's, remembering a past lifetime is no different than remembering a dream. Just as a dream is not real, but it was experienced. A past lifetime is not real, even though it was experienced. In fact, this lifetime is not real, even though it is experienced. So again, sometimes we get truth and illusion mixed up. Illusion can be experienced, but that doesn't make it real. All right, so let's go to 489 in my journal. All right, number 489 says, everything within and extended by primal thought is illusion. All worlds, all lifetimes, all heavens, and all hells are merely belief in one primordial idea. Now, this is amazing because sometimes, I know I've felt confusion around this, and I'm guessing other people feel confusion around this too from time to time. If we have any amount of belief in the world at all, right? Any amount of belief in the world at all, then we can get confused. For example, there's a popular book out now, which I haven't read, but it's a very popular book about a young boy, I think he was probably 3 or 4 years old, very young, right, who had a near-death experience, and he went to heaven, and he met Jesus. Some of you may know this book. Very, very young boy. And when he came back from his near-death experience, he was able to describe in great detail what it was like in heaven. And so everyone is very excited by this very young boy's experience because this means heaven is real, right? This means heaven is real because this young boy experienced heaven in his near-death experience. I remember also there was a book that I read once that cataloged several near-death experiences, and most of them were the typical near-death experience, you know, traveling through the tunnel of light. But there was one lady who seemed to go to a hell. And she talked about the dark creatures who, you know, burned her when they touched her and how frightening it was. And so, you know, you're reading all these wonderful stories about the tunnel of light and thinking, boy, that's true. That's true. There's a tunnel of light. That's true. And then you read this lady's experience. Oh, my God, she experienced a hell. Is that true, too? And then, you know, of course, we have people who experience communication with aliens. There are a lot of people in the world today who channel. I even have one friend who channels communication with aliens, and the aliens tell them where the earth is and our spiritual awakening and what we can expect to happen next in our world based on our current vibration. And we think, oh my God, that's true stuff. What this is saying, number 489, is none of that is true. Reincarnation is not true, even if experienced and remembered. Heaven is not true, even if experienced and remembered. Hell is not true, even if experienced and remembered. Communication with aliens that can tell us where we are on the planet Earth and spiritual awakening is not true, because everything that follows the primal idea is a part of the illusion. It's a part of the dream. And this is where we get confused sometimes. We may even begin to accept this lifetime is illusion, but a near-death experience is reality. That's not the case. Everything that follows the primal thought is not true. You know, this, if we can accept this, the amount of clarity that comes from this is incredible. Because we are no longer confused by what I call the spiritual myths. We no longer get reality and illusion confused. And when you no longer get reality and illusion confused, the amount of clarity and how easy it is to have clarity is incredible. Yeah, and Lynn has written, the only thing that is real about it is its helpfulness in healing the mind. And this is absolutely true. Every story can have a helpful interpretation. Every story. You know, you can watch any movie, and you know, many of us have. We watch movies and we go, oh my God, did you see that in that movie? And we see a helpful interpretation in it. So even things that we know are absolute fiction can have a helpful interpretation. In fact, the only purpose of the entire world is the helpful interpretation. That's the only usefulness that it has. In fact, Holy Spirit says something very similar, or Jesus says something very similar in A Course in Miracles. That's the only usefulness it has. However, there's a difference between a helpful interpretation and reality. The helpful interpretation points toward reality. But all worlds, all lifetimes, all heavens, and all hells are a part of the illusion, are merely belief in one primordial idea. All right, so let's scroll down and click on number 490 underneath the comment and reply area. Number 490 in the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, says, consciousness is infinite peace, which exists forever unmodified. And of course, consciousness here is synonymous with reality, right? Consciousness is infinite peace, which exists forever unmodified. And one thing that I love about that is, you know, until some sort of realization regarding this occurred, there was still a belief that there was still a belief that awakening had to be achieved, that the awakened state does not exist now. You know, I'm completely confused by ego. I have no access to or the awakened mind, and somehow awakening has to be achieved. I mean, that's the belief, and I'm sure you guys, even though you may have worded it differently, I'm sure you're familiar with the belief. When there's a realization that consciousness or reality is the infinite peace which exists forever unmodified, and that realization comes about from realizing that as what I am, then there's also a knowing that even as ego seems to continue, and the world continues to be experienced, even while illusion is still a part of the everyday experience, awakening is here too. No longer does awakening have to be achieved. There's, at least in my case, there's a continued awareness of that which is not awakening, so that those obstacles to love's presence can be fully removed. But there's no longer a belief that awakening has to be achieved. There's an absolute knowing that awakening always is, always has been, completely changeless, forever unmodified, was not at all changed by the tiny mad idea or the primordial idea. It's just more like overlays were put on top of awakening. But awakening is always present. So again, Yoga Vasistha said, consciousness is infinite peace, which exists forever unmodified. All right, so let's look at number 490 in the journal. Hold on one second. My dog wants to go outside.
Come on, Dean.
All right. So number 490. Busyness of mind is extension of illusion. Yet all of this has not taken away the silence of reality. It is ever present. So, you know, that's what's amazing, and this is what I, at least what I heard and what Cheryl was saying just before I came on, is that, you know, the mind can be very, very busy. I could even be completely caught up in believing the mind. I could even be feeling the emotional experience of believing the mind. If the mind's telling a fearful story, I could be in incredible fear. And guess what? The silence of reality is still here. I mean, where is the noise happening? It's happening within the space of the silence. Where is this emotional a turmoil occurring, the one that occurs through the believing of the noise? It's occurring within the space of the silence. You know, it's absolutely amazing that you can't have illusion without the foundation of reality. Reality is always present. And of course, that seems useless, you know, at some point, you know, when, if we're still truly, really believing our thoughts, and if we're still truly caught up in these fearful emotional experiences because we believe our thoughts, and somebody comes along and tells us, but it's the silence of reality that allows it, the silence is here now, it might seem useless at that point. But the truth is, if we just keep giving our willingness to these teachings, at some point, for everyone, and I know for many people in this room, it's already happened, if not everyone, there's a realization that occurs of what that silence is, that that's what I am. There's a realization that occurs that it's always here. And after that, once that realization occurs, the fact that it's always here is helpful. Because even if I do still, to a 90% degree, believe my mind, And then I get caught up in my mind and I start feeling fearful. As soon as I remember to, in some way, check for the silence, whether it's through the inquiry, like the question, who am I, or whether it's through some other practice, if I know what I am, what I find is every time I check for it, it's there. Every time I check. And that starts to, the more we check for it, the more we recognize what we are, the more it seems to come into the foreground. And pretty soon the belief and thoughts just isn't happening like it used to. Pretty soon, you know, the thoughts, you know, my current experience is that the thinking is still pretty active. In some ways it's not as active as it used to be. I can't say it's fully active, but it's still pretty active. But the belief in the thoughts is very small, very, very small. So what happens is the thoughts can be happening and it's not much different than having a TV on in the room that I'm not paying a lot of attention to. And there's just this awareness of what I am, the silence of what I am. And it allows me to experience so much that at one time would have caused me stress, would have caused me fear, would have caused me guilt. And instead, it doesn't cause any of that, because truly, it was believing the thoughts that caused that. So the experience can be unchanged. I can have a very hurried day rushing from one thing to another without the stress of the hurried day that used to be there, or without the frustration of the hurried day not being the kind of day I want. I want a different kind of day, because it's the thoughts that caused all of that. And so when we become aware of what we are, everything else can still be. All of the thinking can still be. All of the world can still be. But we're aware of the silence. And it's with us always, because it's always been with us always. The difference is now the realization has occurred. And the illusion is no longer a problem, because reality is realized. So busyness of mind is extension of illusion. Yet all of this has not taken away the silence of reality. It is ever present. All right, so let's scroll down and click on number 491. And I will give you a link. It's a strange number. Usually the number that comes at the end of these links matches the number in my journal. This one has a strange number at the end, but hopefully it will get you to 291 or a 491. Number 491 in the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, says, "It is good to remind yourself that all this is but a long dream." It is good, and by good he means helpful, not moral, of course. He means it's helpful. Like Lynn typed earlier, the only thing that's really meaningful or real about the world is the helpfulness in healing the mind. Well, this is basically what Yoga Vasistha is saying. It is good to remind yourself that all this is but a long dream. So let's look at the journal, number 491. "An awakening to reality, awareness of dream state has been given. Holding this awareness in present mind is not belief. It is practicing present awareness, which is also making space and giving invitation for full awareness to dawn." If you know anything about my Seven Steps journal, you know there's a few practices that are recommended in the Seven Steps journal. The practice of contemplation, the practice of inquiry or investigation, which are the same, and the practice of remembrance. Remembrance is remembering what was realized as we go about our day. So for example, you know, when I'm sitting in the chair with the contemplation and the inquiry is happening, there's a lot of realizing that occurs. Remembrance then is when I get up and walk away from my chair and I get involved in my work and I get involved in my day-to-day relationships and, you know, life goes on as it does. It is holding in my mind the remembrance of the realization that occurred during contemplation and inquiry. So what can happen in the chair when I'm in contemplation and inquiry is that I can see in a very real and effective way the unreality of the world. But then what happens when I get up and I'm moving about and I'm getting caught up in the involvement of the life of my life again, that clarity is not as clear, I will say. It doesn't have the stark clarity that it had during the deep contemplation time. And the reason for that is because the mind comes back. When I'm in deep contemplation, there is no mind. And so there's stark clarity. When I come back to my daily life, the mind comes back and the clarity is not as stark. It's a little bit weakened, I guess. I don't like that word, but that's the best word I have right now. It's just not the same. However, the remembrance of the stark clarity remains. Sorry, I stutter more now, so I guess I'm turning into Ken Wapnick or Moses. So hopefully y'all don't mind my stuttering. I didn't used to do it, but I've noticed lately that it's happening more. So what I can do when I walk through my day is I can just remember, but not in a fake way, not in a lying to myself way, not even in an intellectual way because I read it in a book, but based on the stark clarity, based on the stark clarity that I had during contemplation, I can remember this is not real. It's a different kind of remembering than if I just read it in a book. It's a different kind of remembering. Because it comes from such clarity. And what I find is that the more I'm willing to hold on to this remembrance, although I seem to be, as far as I know, extremely effective in the world, extremely, except for the fact that I'm starting to stutter, except for my verbal communication skills, yeah, and my short-term memory, which is getting worse and worse. But other than those short things, I'm extremely effective in the world. In fact, Lynn is working with me on a team, and so I think she knows that I'm effective on that team. I'm a very effective person because I don't have so much crap in my way of being effective. It doesn't make sense sometimes to the intellectual mind that the less you believe the world is real, how you should become more effective. You know, the ego says if you believe in the world less, then you should be some kind of a dropout, a non-carer. This is all meaningless. I don't care. And I understand that thought process because that's the way the ego thinks. All that I'm saying is that's not true. That's not the way it works. That's not what happens. What happens as we begin to care, as we begin to see the world as less real and therefore care about it less in a personal way, somehow at the same time we become more involved. I can't explain it. And as we become more involved in a heart way, as Lisa's saying, it's the memory of the heart, then we also become more effective. Hello, Jamie. Welcome back. Oh, you're wet. Did you get washed? Were you dirty? Did somebody have to wash you? Yes, you dirty dog. So as we begin to care less in a personal way, which means we're not personally involved, personally attached, somehow at the same time we care more, we're involved more. It's rather funny. I'm no longer disappointed if things don't go my way because I don't have the personal caring, but yet I'm highly effective dealing with whatever arises to be dealt with. And all of this, at least for me, because we're talking about my journal and my inner guidance and my inner self training or awakening me, right? But in my experience, the more I was willing to remember, even in what seems to be a pretty strong moment, when, you know, when the average human would think things are going really wrong now, as long as I was willing to remember from a place of actual remembrance that this is not real, and I seemed to become detached more and more and more, I became happier and more effective and more at peace. Because this experience is still new enough for me that I very easily recall the way I was before, it's still rather amazing to me. It's amazing to me that I can look people right in the eye and say very direct things because something very direct needs to be said right now. And I'm not at all personally involved. My happiness, my peace is not at all untouched. Everything is simultaneously perfect. Before, if I had to say something very direct to someone, I would have worried about it in advance. I would have been fearful. It would have been hard for me to face them. And then I would have felt guilty afterwards because I would have thought I was bad for saying something so direct to someone. Now I just look them in the eye. There's absolute joy. There's nothing but joy. And what needs to be said is said. I'm more effective without the baggage. It's amazing. And yet, I'm not at all concerned about the outcome. An awakening to reality, awareness of dream state has been given. This has happened, is what this is saying. This has happened. I've experienced that awareness. Holding this awareness in present mind is not belief, and the reason it's not belief is because it's not intellectual. It is practicing present awareness. It's still a practicing because the stark clarity that occurs in contemplation is not as stark in what I'll call day-to-day life. And until it's that stark all the time, there's a practicing that's happening, right? So holding this awareness in present mind is not belief. It is practicing present awareness, which is also making space and giving invitation for full awareness to dawn. You could say you're readying yourself for grace. Readying yourself for grace to come and for God to take the last step, as the Course says. All right, so let's scroll down and click on number 492 underneath the comment and reply area. Number 492 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. Just as the dream mountain is realized as pure void when the dreamer wakes up, even so are all these forms realized to be non-existent when one is enlightened. Now, here, when he talks about the dream mountain, he's literally talking about a mountain that maybe you saw in a nighttime dream while asleep in a bed. You know, he's talking about that, whatever your dream scenery was in your nighttime dream. He's saying that when you awaken from that nighttime dream, then you know that none of that scenery ever existed. It didn't. It's not like the scenery existed and then disappeared. It never existed. It was just mind stuff. And of course he's saying that's the same as this longer dream that we think is real life. It's just as much mind stuff as that nighttime dream was. Just as the dream mountain is realized as pure void when the dreamer wakes up, even so are all these forms realized to be non-existent when one is enlightened. All right, let's look at number 492 in the journal. The path of awakening. Oh, this is magnificent stuff, if you're ready for it. The path of awakening is also illusion. An illusory path taken by an illusory one in an illusory world. But that is not a reason to not follow the path. It leads up and out of an illusory rabbit hole into the sunlight of reality. If reality is completely unchanged, and it is, then reality could not have fallen asleep, and reality cannot need to awaken. If I sat here in my chair and I asked the question, what if I was the Queen of England? And I began to imagine myself as the Queen of England. I began to imagine, you know, how I dress, how I eat, what my bedroom looks like, how I interact with my family, how I interact with my staff, you know, how it is to be in public, how careful I need to be so that the paparazzi do not, you know, say stuff about me that I don't want said. And, you know, I go into this elaborate dream. The truth is I don't have to do anything to be Regina Dawn Acres, because even as I'm imagining this elaborate dream, I am still Regina Dawn Acres. There is no Queen of England. At 4 p.m., Lisa, is when I have my tea. And lately I've been doing that. Maybe I am turning British. I tend to have tea around 4 p.m. every day. I've never done that until the last few months, but it seems to happen now. So 4 p.m. is my tea time. But I don't have to, as Queen Elizabeth, remember that I'm Regina. Because Queen Elizabeth isn't real. Well, in spite of our experience as Regina and Lisa and Lynn and Grace and everybody else, and as hard as this is to believe sometimes because of our current experience, we don't have to remember who we are. Because who we are already is. The person who seems to be awakening is illusory. Everything the person experiences, A Course in Miracles, NTI, the seven steps to awakening, this realization, then this realization, then this realization, it's illusory. It's all change. Everything that changes is illusory. But what's really interesting about 492 is it says, however, that's not a reason not to follow it. Even though it's an illusory dream figure, having an illusory awakening, because reality has never changed, we are still to allow that illusory awakening. And the mind's like, what? You know, like either this is real and important or it's not real. The mind can't understand it's not real, but allow it to happen anyway. But whoever said we had to understand, excuse me, do you have a question, Miss Danielle? Kristen Wright, sitting here with rice in your lap. You can interrupt me when you have questions about cooking.
Point two or two?
No, the two.
Okay.
There you go. She's cooking dinner, and she had a question. How long have you been sitting here? Okay. She was sitting here with some rice in her lap, and all of a sudden I noticed she might have a cooking question. Maybe I should turn my attention to her, or maybe I'll have nothing to eat later. Okay. So again, the path of awakening is also illusion. It's an illusory path taken by an illusory one in an illusory world. And if anybody ever says that to you, you don't need to be offended and think that they're talking, you know, telling you that your awakening path isn't important, when, you know, because this is just truth. It's an illusion. The whole dang thing is an illusion. However, wisdom says that is not a reason to not follow the path. Follow it anyway. This is the part of illusion that somehow miraculously leads back to the realization of reality, and that reality has never changed. You know, if you've read A Course in Miracles, you know that A Course in Miracles teaches forgiveness. Forgiveness is very important in A Course in Miracles. But if you've ever read the clarification of terms, then you know that A Course in Miracles also teaches that forgiveness is an illusion. And again, we don't have to understand how the awakening process is illusory. We don't have to understand how the people that we think we are is illusory. Like I said, no one said we have to understand. We just follow and trust. That's like following grace. Allow grace to be. All right, so let's scroll down and click on number 493. Number 493 in the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, says, "When the wise one realizes that this world is like a dream city, his hopes are not centered in it." When the wise one realizes that this world is like a dream city, his hopes are not centered in it. All right, so let's look at... Look at number 493 in the journal. "There is only one place to focus attention now, and that is within. Every thought, every perception, every experience, and every decision is seen perfectly from there." This is also my experience now. I feel like I'm watching myself from someplace other than fully being Regina. I don't want to mislead and say that I have no experience of being Regina. That's not true. But I also do not fully have the experience of being Regina. I'm somewhere in between that I can't quite explain. And again, it's new to me, and it's rather amazing even to me to witness. But I observe her. I observe in a natural way, not in an efforting way, her thoughts, her actions. It's even funny to me because I know that, you know, anyone who still fully believes in themselves, when they're watching me, they think I'm acting from my thoughts. That's not true anymore. I can't even find a connection between my thoughts and my actions. The thoughts are going yada, 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 yada without anyone believing in them. And the body's doing things. And sometimes the thoughts, I mean, sometimes they're so out of alignment, it's hilarious. The thoughts will be saying, "I don't want to do this, there's no way I want to do this, blah, blah, blah." And without any emotional belief, so therefore without any feeling of resistance, even while the mind is going off talking about how I don't want to do this, the body is very effectively doing it. And the funny thing is, you know, I can't find what's moving the body. Used to, when I believed the thoughts, I would have told you the thoughts were moving the body. I would have told you that I think I want to go there, and then I go there. I think I don't want to do that, and then I don't do it. I would have told you the thoughts are moving the body. But now it's as if there had been a cord from the mind to the body, so that there was a connection there, it's as if somebody cut the cord. And the mind is still the mind. But it doesn't have a relationship to the body. And that leaves me with the oddest feeling that can really only be described as, and this may sound, I don't know, it may sound confused, but it's actually not. It's the feeling that I don't know who I am. I'm not the mind. I see it, and I know I'm not it. I'm not what it's thinking. It's just talking. I'm not the body. Because there's nothing in me that is causing the body to move in the way that it is. I'm neither, so what am I? And I can't even answer the question. I had the oddest experience, the oddest experience in a restaurant a week ago or 2 weeks ago with Danielle. I ordered a salad. And when the waitress asked me what kind of dressing I want, my mind said ranch, and my mouth said honey mustard. They had nothing to do with each other. And then Danielle, knowing that, you know, Regina typically orders ranch, she observed that, and she said to me later, she said, oh God, this sounds so crazy. She said, Regina, why did you order honey mustard? You never order honey mustard. And I said, and I never once had this thought, I don't even know where the words came from, I said, I thought honey mustard would go better with a steak salad. And then I was like, what? Where did those words come from? I never had that thought. The first time I heard that thought was when it was coming out of my mouth. I told Danielle, I said, I don't know who's speaking through me. I said, God must have thought that honey mustard would go better with a steak salad because I never thought about it. This is my experience right now, and I'm sure that, you know, there are going to be more experiences, but this is my experience right now, and it's the most bizarre experience in the world. It leaves me, oh, did it taste good? Actually, it did taste quite good. Yeah. It made the salad taste somewhat like a steak sandwich without bread. So whatever was moving me to order that dressing that I never order with that salad was completely correct. But I can't claim it. I noticed one person who was saying over and over again, I did this and I did this. And the reason I noticed it is because I know that I used to feel that way. Not that long ago, I would say, I did this. I had this thought and I did this. It was my idea. I had to make them see it my way. You know, I would have had those thoughts. But now I have no idea what is moving the body, what is moving the mouth. There's no way I can explain it. And now I understand why some people say it's being lived, or it's God living through me. I heard Adi Ashanti say once, God likes to ride bikes through me. Because I can't claim it. And in fact, I even look at it now and I wonder, how did I ever claim it? It's funny because how did I ever think that it was me? I don't quite understand that now. And again, somebody comes into my house tomorrow and you hang out with me, you're not going to see anything unusual. There's nothing unusual in the way I talk, except I stutter more. There's nothing unusual in the way I act. There's nothing unusual in the way I'm with my boyfriend or with my daughter or with Danielle or with my dog. The unusualness comes from the way I see it now, the way I see what's happening. Yeah, I do laugh. I laugh more and I stutter more. Yeah. And I'm happy. I'm always happy. There is only one place to focus attention now, and that is within. Now this is the practice that led to this odd experience I'm describing. And I say odd because it's different than everything else has always been. There is only one place to focus attention now, and that is within. Every thought, every perception and every experience and every decision is seen perfectly from there. So through this practiced watching, a natural watching spontaneously arose. And I don't want to pretend like the natural watching is 100% consistent yet, because sometimes it's not, and then I return to the practiced watching. But the natural watching is consistent enough that I have this odd experience that I have described to you. And the the natural watching seems, at least in my experience, to have come about from the practiced watching. The practiced watching at least came first. All right, so I guess that's it. I guess I'm out of time. So what I will do, of course, is unclick the mic and save the recording, all that normal stuff that happens. But I wanted to say good night and I love you first. I'm glad somebody's saying something about my stuttering. What is that message? Let's see. Stuttering sometimes is trying to say two different thoughts at the same time. Yeah, I don't know where the stuttering is coming from. Maybe the stuttering comes from not having that connection between the mind and the body anymore and having it not perfected yet. I don't know where the stuttering comes from, but I don't mind it, and I hope you don't mind it. All right, I'm letting go of the mic. Bye.